Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Karen Cox, a professor of history at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and the author, most recently, of Goat's Castle, A True Story of Murder, Race, and the Gothic South. She has an op-ed at the New York Times, Why Confederate Monuments Must Fall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Karen Cox.
Thank you.
And ostensibly, the reason why the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists showed up in Charlottesville was to protest plans by the city of Charlottesville to remove the statue of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general and the leader of the Confederate Army in the Civil War. And it apparently there's a move across the country to do this in many states, including North Carolina. But what is this idea that seems to be expressed by President Trump yesterday in his impromptu news conference in Trump Tower, where he conflated Robert E. Lee with George Washington, the founding father, and Thomas Jefferson, saying, you know, today is Robert E. Lee, and the next thing they're going to be doing is taking down statues of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Isn't there as an historian, surely there's a fundamental difference between the founding fathers of this country and the person who tore this country apart, in effect, the traitor who started the Civil War?
It's just an example of historical illiteracy about who these people are and what these monuments stood for. To conflate the two is an error, you know, historically, and they're very, very different. You know, historians have been weighing on this recently. You know, the truth of the matter is the monuments to Confederate soldiers, Confederate generals, et cetera, are really about people who sought to break away from the nation, which makes them quite different than people like the founding fathers. They regarded the Civil War, historians do, at least among the people who were engaged in it, as sort of like a second American Revolution, except this time, the American South had pulled away. And so there is a fundamental difference. There's also a fundamental difference in that while certainly George Washington and Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, it's not the same as engaging in a war to preserve slavery, which these, you know, the leaders of the Confederacy were involved in.
So what is this word heritage that's used so often? And the president used it yesterday, and I believe it's a sort of buzzword, if not a euphemism, for Southern values, if you will, in terms of the White South going back to the Confederacy.
Well, heritage is just the word itself is really could be applied to a lot of different types of, I think it's about historical memory more than anything else. It's not necessarily history. Heritage often involves some emotional, visceral response to the past, very often because people have a personal connection to it. And so in this country, beginning in the 1890s, there were Confederate heritage organizations being formed, like the United Daughters of the Confederacy and the Sons of Confederate Veterans. But there were also heritage organizations like the Colonial Dames or the Daughters of the American Revolution or Sons of the American Revolution that are we would consider heritage organizations. And those types of organizations are based on individual lineage and people's having a personal connection to an ancestor who participated in those events.
Well, in your near you in Durham, North Carolina, a group of people literally, as you point out in your article in the New York Times, Karen Cox, they took matters into their own hands. Apparently, the legislature had been somewhat dawdling with this issue, having passed a law in 2015 prohibiting the removal of monuments. I saw it on TV. They tore down a statue of a Confederate soldier, and then the protesters sort of kicked it and punched it. Of course, being made of bronze, it seemed like they were actually getting a stubbed toes, if you will. But What is the resistance then? I mean, I guess there's two sides, not to quote Donald Trump, but there are two sides. There are people that tore down the Confederate soldier in Durham, North Carolina, but there are also people who are resisting the removal of these statues, is what we saw with the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville.
Right. Well, there have long been heritage organizations, but who are now joined by people from outside of the South, as the events in Charlottesville reflected, who are joining in on the cause. And so within the South, there's not been much movement, even despite what happened in Charleston in 2015. And so the numbers of people that have belonged into these kind of Southern heritage groups is really unclear. I don't think they're that large in number. But when they've been joined by white nationalists from outside of the region, then it becomes a kind of a different thing altogether. And so there's that group on that side. The people on the other side, the people who protested and the people who yanked down the monument in Durham, should signal to the rest of America that the South is not a monolith when it comes to their political points of view. And so there are Southerners, white and black and of different classes, who will all are in agreement on what should be done with these monuments. Not everybody's going to agree, but this is the thing. There's this assumption, there has been an assumption that the entire white South reveres these monuments, and that's just simply not true. And so you saw that reflected in Durham with people taking that monument down and, pulling in and kicking it and doing, it looked pretty awful by the end of it. So those are sort of the two sides of it. And so, it's hard to say, what the numbers are on each side, because what we're seeing is the media is like certainly honed in on these white nationalist rallies, and they're beginning to spring up in different cities across the South where there's a threat of monument removal. But as Baltimore showed us just yesterday or last night, if they want to do it, if local officials want to do something about that, they can go in and take them in the dark at night, and this is what they did. But in places like here in North Carolina, in 2015, where they passed a law that to protect monuments, that people can be prosecuted for that. And currently, our governor, who's a Democrat, but he's up against a majority Republican legislature, is calling for some sort of removal. He's calling first to get rid of that law, and then move forward on removing monuments, which exist on the state capitol grounds, as they do in many states. On state and local courthouses, for example.
Well, of course, the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, was so horrified by what happened in Charlottesville that he wants to remove all of the Confederate monuments in the state, but obviously he will face a lot of resistance. But they haven't fallen, of all places, in the nation's capital, in the National Statuary Hall, where there are a number of Southern, including Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederate South, along with Rose Stevens and Vance and Wheeler, some of whom have hideous histories of, for example, Confederate cavalryman Joseph Wheeler. He was responsible for a massacre of freed slaves in Ebenezer Creek in 1864, and yet there he is in the nation's capital. So it would seem to me that if we really want a clean house here, we ought to start with the nation's capital.
Well, I imagine that question is going to keep coming up until some decision is made about it. Those were placed in the early 20th century during the era of Jim Crow, when all states were asked to submit two names or to represent their state, so that there would be figures of these individuals, and which is why you have many of the people that you named in the Capitol. So, yeah, I'm not even sure where one would start there. And I imagine it will have to go through some sort of legislative bureaucracy before anything happens. But it's going to require, Americans in different states to speak up to their representatives about making changes in the Capitol where those monuments are concerned.
Well, Karen, since you are in the South and you are an historian, can you just sort of give us an idea of what it is to have this nostalgia for the so-called lost cause, the mythology of the Confederacy, as you write, describing it in your op-ed piece in the New York Times as a grand patriarchal civilization. I recall a movie was made about the Civil War from the point of view of what life was like in the South. It was called Cold Mountain. And there was a scene in the movie where this doctor was tending to all of these Confederate wounded in a converted, antebellum mansion. And these sort of Scarlett O'Hara women in their big hoop skirts were sort of in there helping, doing charity work. And there were all these horribly wounded young Confederate soldiers around. And the doctor says, you know, I just can't believe that these young boys died for the plantation owner's right to replace them with slaves. So how can one reconcile that illogic?
Well, I don't know, you know, that particular statement about replacing them with slaves, but I will say this. I think more recently in the film The Free State of Jones, there's a statement being made, you know, because that was a particular county in Mississippi that seceded from Mississippi, who made this claim about why he understood, the leader of this group understood, that what they were fighting for was defense of the system of slavery that really only benefited a small percentage of men in the South, and that there was more in common, you know, because he gets together with a band of, his name's Newt Knight, and he gets together with a band of, you know, also of runaway slaves to kind of, you know, defend themselves against, you know, even the Confederate Army. So it's, I think there were people that understood it, but what has happened in the last century and a half is that the war has been, and the reasons people had gone to war have been romanticized. There's a, you know, the mythology that's attached to it is entrenched in Southern culture. Not for everyone, but even people who are well educated have a sympathy to these sorts of things because perhaps they had an ancestor fight for the Confederacy, for example. Or, for example, that because most of the war was fought on Southern soil, that there was a lot of suffering. But there's, you know, they often neglect to consider the suffering of 4 million slaves for centuries.
Right, and in terms of casualties, it was at roughly 800,000 died, more on the northern side than the southern side. And per capita, that still to this day is a greater ratio of war casualties and death than all of America's other wars combined. So there's no escaping what a horrible experience that Civil War was. I mean, you can't emphasize enough what a terrible trauma was brought about by these people aloft on that statue like Robert E. Lee.
Yeah. Well, and plus, not to, you know, to think about, you know, so many people die because of just the, you know, the poor medical treatment or the lack of it that they could get when they, you know, had a bullet wound or whatever. So yeah, there's a lot of suffering on both sides. But, you know, the thing that gets lost in the lost cause is the issue of slavery. And those white people who tend to buy into the myth of the lost cause also buy into the myth of this idea of faithful slaves, that, you know, somehow it wasn't as bad as history makes it out to be. So they've romanticized the relationship between planter and slave. And so that, too, is problematic within this lost cause mythology.
Well, Karen Cox, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
It was my pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Karen Cox, who's a professor of history at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and the author most recently of Goat Castle, A True Story of Murder, Race, and the Gothic South. And she has an op-ed at the New York Times, Why Confederate Monuments Must Fall. We're going to take a brief station break and back, looking into the move by Jeff Sessions' Justice Department to demand that the web hosting company DreamHost turn over data detailing all visits to an anti-Trump protest website.